Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Pei Dalet Amud Aleph, the last line. Rav Shmuel, Damrei Tarvayu, both Rav and Shmuel say, Kelav Shel Adam, Konelo B'chol Makom. A person's Kelim can acquire on his behalf if he's in a transaction, and the item of the transaction is placed into his utensils. He can successfully acquire that object, Chutz Mi Rishut Rabim. With the exception of Rishut Rabim, here the Reshbam qualifies the nature of the transaction and first of all says, Im pasak damim, has to be a case where they've come to agreement on price. Reshbam will say this over and over again, that until there is a determined price, the transaction is never completed because people are not samcha date, as the Gemara will say later on, unless they know for certain what the price is. Number two is, if the case where the individual's keli is working on his behalf, that is true if, for instance, it's in the Reshut HaMocher. It is in the property of the Mocher if the Mocher gives him permission to acquire. And that's what he says here. Kedon d'amarle b'hedja ipnei kelecha. If he says explicitly that your kelim will be successful at acquiring that which is being given or put into them, even though they are currently found in my possession. We'll get into more detail about that in the Tosefta that we will see today. So given those two qualifications, number one is that you have completion of price. And number two is that you have permission to be there. Chutz Mi Reshut Rabim comes to say anywhere where you do not have permission to be, that will not work. And that's what the Rashbam says. V'adin chatzer she'enu shoshenehem. It's equivalent if they go into someone else's property without permission, that's the same as Reshut Rabim because neither of them have permission to be in that location. And so Reshut Rabim in this case represents places where you do not have permission. And Kol Makom represents places where you do have permission. And the one qualification we had was the Reshut HaMocher, where you technically don't have permission because he didn't grant it to you. That is granted through his saying, your Kelim can function in my property in order to acquire. Now, Rabbi Yochanan ben Shlomo ben Lachish Damrei Tarvayu Afilu Reshut HaRabim. They say, even in Reshut HaRabim, and the same would be true for Reshut Sheino Shoshneihem, your Kelim can work to acquire on your behalf. So seemingly there's a machloket as to the power of the kelima of the lokeach. Rav and Shmuel seem to limit the efficacy of the kelim shalokeach to places where you have permission to put it. Whereas the Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan don't have that limit, and the kelim of the lokeach can acquire in all places. That seems to be the machloket between them. But Amar Papa lo plige, there is no machloket here between Rav and Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Kan b'rishut rabim, kan b'simta. The difference between them is what we're speaking about. The Reshut HaRabim, we see this in Shabbat, as well as in Mecca HaMemkar, is divided up into different parts. There's the main thoroughfare, or the Reshut HaRabim, where people travel. Over there, you don't have permission to put items down. You don't have permission to stop. You don't have permission to do to transactions over there, because that impedes the passage of people through the Reshut HaRabim. That is the Reshut HaRabim that Rav and Shmuel were speaking about, the area where you're not allowed to stop. You don't have permission to do anything. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, when they were speaking about the Reshut HaRabim over here, they're talking about the simta, or the sides, the tzidei Reshut HaRabim, or areas that protrude from the Reshut HaRabim, that are not necessarily thoroughfares that people traverse, but rather areas that belong to the public, but they're for the use of the public at large. You can put down your kelim to rest over there. You can transact in these locations. And therefore, it's a location where both of them have permission to be there. So therefore, it becomes like a location of Chatzer Shel Shnehem. It becomes like a location that belongs to both of them. And in that location, since you have permission to utilize it, the Kelim Shel Lokeach will be successful at acquiring it. And it seems from here that the Simta will only be successful at acquiring it if it is in your Kli. If it's just on the Karka of the Simta, it will not be successful at acquiring it. And that would be similar to the position of Rabbi Zeira that we saw yesterday that required a Kli. Although there are Rishonim over here that believe that even without a Kli you can't acquire as long as you got there first. We have this in other areas of Halacha, that whichever party gets there first, it becomes their possession. I mean that the Reshut HaRabim, like the Simta, which is available for everybody to use, the first person there gains the rights that are associated with it, and then those that come later are subject to it being his property or his possession, at least temporarily, to complete the transaction. So if the lokeach did get there first, he could possibly use the karka. And we'll see that in a second in the Rabbeinu Gershom. V'amai karei le Reshut HaRabim. He wanted to say simta. Why didn't he say simta? Why did he call it Reshut HaRabim? Shein Rishuti Yachid. Rishuti Rabim is not a Rishuti Yachid, not meaning that it's literally a Rishuti Rabim. How can I mean Stavro? The explanation that we're giving makes sense. Dami Ravelam Rabbi Yochanan. Kelav shel adam konelo b'chol makom sheyishol rishut lahanicho. So here we have a quote in the name of Rabbi Yochanan from Rabbi Bo that the kelim of an individual are successful at acquiring for him as long as he has permission to be there. Yeshlo rishut in, eino rishut lo. If he has permission, it works. If he doesn't have permission, it does not work. Shma mina, it's pretty clear from here that Rabbi Yochanan believes that it will only work in a simta. It will not work in a rishut rabim. And therefore, the Rav Papa's reconciliation of these two memorot of the Amoraim makes sense. And now the Rabbeinu Gershom notes over here that Rabbi Zera believed like Rabbi Abahu over here. Rabbi Zera, we saw in yesterday's daf, who says you need the kelim of the koneh in order to work in the simta, he holds like Rabbi Abahu over here that says kelav shel adam koneh lebchol makom sheyesh lo reshut. On the other hand, Rabbi Asi, who disagreed, is going to explain that Rabbi Yochanan meant when he said that you have permission to acquire. He meant to acquire even without kelim. He's not going to agree with Rabbi Abahu's statement of Rabbi Yochanan, but rather explain Rabbi Yochanan's permission over here to acquire in the simta is with even without kelim. And if you look in the Baal HaYad Tosafot, the Baal HaYad Tosafot explain why we need both memrot of Rabbi Yochanan. So that's why we need the memrot that we saw before from Rabbi Asi that Madad Beniah Hagebi Simta Kana, and the memrot over here which tells us that Kelav shel adam konolo b'chol makom sheyesh lo reshut. One of them teaches you that it only works when the mocher has rights there, when the mocher says lechu kneh. On the other hand, when it's the kli of the lokeach, then when the individual is modeid, measures into the kli lokeach, it's the equivalent of saying lechu kneh. He doesn't need to articulate that. So if it's a kli of a third party, then you would require him to say lechu kneh. But if it is the kli of the lokeach, and the mocher is putting it into the kli of the lokeach, that's the equivalent of him saying lechu kneh. And through that, the Baal HaYad Tosafot explain why you need two different memrot from Rabbi Yochanan, each one teaching you a chiddush. The first one is teaching you a chiddush that it can work in the simta, and that's because you have reshut to be there. The second one's teaching you that even when you have reshut to be there, you still need a lechu kneh. That can either happen by articulation of saying lechu kneh, or that can happen because madad, that he's measuring it out and putting it into the item, it's the equivalent, or it's as if he said lechu kneh. Although in the end, the Baal HaYad Tosafot said we have a third memra from Rabbi Yochanan that says that you can do it b'chol makom. We set it up as simta, which would be a third memra of Rabbi Yochanan. That we don't have any reason why we need a third memra of Rabbi Yochanan. And he says maybe one of these three was learned from the other one, meaning that two of them are necessary, and the third one was learned achad michlal chaverta. Okay, now we move on to a tosefta. The tosefta is related to what we've been discussing until now, but this tosefta will be fundamental, the central theme of the next couple of dapim. It will take us in different places, and then we'll come back to the tosefta to prove things or try to prove things from it. But the tosefta begins, Tanashma arba bimidot bimokrim. There are four different measurements, or four different midinim, or four different contexts of sale. This turns out to be a machloket arishonim, exactly what these arba midot are. We'll read through the tosefta first, and then come back and explain the different machlokot as to how to read the arba midot that we have over here. Achlo nitma mida. Until the item has yet to be measured out to the full amount of the sale, lamocher, it belongs to the seller. Mishenit mala mida. Once you've filled up the measure to the full amount of the quantity that you're going to sell, lalokeach, then it belongs to the lokeach. Bame devarim amurim. When is this said? B'mida sheino shel shnehem. When you're using a third party's measurement. Since you're using a third party's measurement, as Rashbam explains over here, the third party lends them the measurement to use, but he's lending it to both parties to use. He's lending it to the mocher in order to measure out how much he's selling, and he's lending it to the lokeach to acquire it once they've measured out the full amount. And that's what the Tosefta in essence is saying, is that since the kli belongs to this third party, until the point that it reaches the quantity agreed to, then it belongs to the mocher, because that was the purpose of the kli, was given to the mocher in order to measure out what he is selling. And until he reaches the quantity agreed upon, it's in his possession. That's whether for good or bad. That means that if he wants to rescind the sale, then that's fine. If it gets lost or something happens to it, it's his responsibility as well. Once it reaches the point of the quantity, the full amount that he wants to sell to the lokeach, then the third party gave the measuring instrument to the lokeach to acquire it on his behalf. So once it reaches the full amount, the full quantity of the transaction, then the transaction goes through and the lokeach acquires it. And then, number one, you can't rescind the sale anymore. And number two is the responsibility for the item is now under the auspices of the buyer. So that is the first section of the Tosefta. And that we qualified with Bamed Dvar Memorim when we're talking about a kli, a utensil of a third party. If the measuring instrument belonged to one of them, over here the Rashbam explains to one of them means either one of them, whether it is the mocher or whether it is the lokeach. The other Rishonim will say that the only important one here is the lokeach, and therefore when they say midash alechad mehem, it means one of them, the buyer, which is the one that matters over here. Rishon, Rishon, kana. Then, as it goes in, he acquires it. So, if it belongs to the lokeach, as the mocher measures into this utensil, that's the kli of the lokeach, and the kli of the lokeach is successful at acquiring it as it comes into the kli. The Gemara later on will discuss what exactly needs to be in place beforehand. We already know you have to have pisuk damim, you have to have conclusion on price, that the Rashbam already told us. And we'll see in a second in the Tosefta that there's a qualification of the locations where this works. And we already saw that before with Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish and Rav and Shmuel, that it's not going to work everywhere, but it's going to work in places where he has permission to have the kli. And as he goes into the kli, it will acquire on behalf of the lokeach, because it is the lokeach's kli. And it's as if he did a kinyan mishicha, or as if he did a kinyan akbah on it, because the kli acquires on behalf of the lokeach. For the Rashbam, who says that it's the same is true by the mocher, which is that if it's the mocher's kli, then the mocher keeps it in his possession. Meaning, as it goes into the kli, it remains the mocher's until the mocher gives it to the lokeach to acquire it. So that means that's Rishon Rishon Kana, that the mocher continues to own it until he gives it over or permits the lokeach to take it and acquire it in that manner. Now again, we have a qualification in the Tosefta, which is Bamed Dvarim Amorim, Birshut Arabim, Ubechatzer She'en Ashel Shnehem. That's only true when we're talking about a public venue, as well as a chatzer that doesn't belong to either of them. Aval, but Birshut Mocher, if it is the property of the Mocher, Lo Kana, Ad Shik Be'enu, Ad Shil Yotzienu Mirshuto. Then he only has two options here, which is that he has to do a kinyan akbah, because a kinyan akbah works in any location. And so therefore, if he lifts it up, then he has been koneh it, if the mocher gave him permission to acquire it in that manner. Or if it's the kli of the lokeach, when he picks up his kli, he acquires it. Otherwise, the kli, we'll see in a second, is batel to the karka, and the kli of the lokeach cannot successfully acquire in the reshut of the mocher. Or the other option is to do a kinyan mishicha, which is to take the item out of the property of the mocher into another property. The other property has to be an area where the lokeach has permission to be. Taking it to Reshut Arbim will not help. He has to take it into a location that he has rights to. The Gemara in Ketubot mentions that he takes it into Tzidei Reshut Arbim, into the Simta. And either moving it from the property of the mocher to the Simta is successful, or it's a case where he puts his hand very close to the ground, and his hand can acquire for him when he moves it out from the reshut of the mocher to his hand, even though he's never been magbia, even though he never lifted it up. So here he's successful at acquiring it either through a kinyan mishicha or a kinyan hagba'a. Those are the necessary kinyanim, b'shut ha-mocher. B'shut lokeach. If you're in the property of the lokeach, kevin shekibil alav mocher kana lokeach. Then as soon as the mocher agrees to the sale, then the sale goes through. Because if the mocher is bringing his items to the house of the lokeach, as soon as he agrees and the price is set, then the lokeach acquires right away, because his reshut, his chatzer, acquires on his behalf. Even if it is the kli of the mocher, even if it's the utensil of the mocher, because the kli is batel to the karka. It is as if it doesn't exist in the face of the karka of the lokeach, and therefore he is successful at acquiring, even if it is in the kli of the mocher, as soon as the mocher gives permission for the transaction to go through, and the kinyan is immediate. And there you don't need, again, a kli of the lokeach, because either the karka, if it's onto the property of the lokeach, or even in the kli of the mocher, you will be successful at acquiring it. And then the Braita says, Birshut ala mufkadim, it's low, lo kana, achi kabalalav, o achi skored mikomam. If a person has deposited these items with a third party, and now he wants to sell those items to the buyer, then that is only successful If Achi Kabelalav, if the third party accepts to grant ownership of his property to the buyer, and then that way he'll do a kinyan agav, Achi Skorit Mikoman, or until he rents the location where they are found, and then he does a kinyan agav through that schira. So now we just read the Tosefta. The Gemara in 1 second will tell us why it brought the Tosefta over here to question the conclusion that we brought before. But again, the Tosefta said that there were four different sections over here. And the way the Rabbeinu Gershom explains it is that the Arba here mean Arba Rishiyot. There are four different locations in which there are different dinim. And if you look in the Rabbeinu Gershom, he says the first location is Breshut Rabim Ubechatzer She'enu Shel Shnehem. That's the first area where you can have acquisition with the kelim of the lokeach. That will be problematic, as we will see in a second, for what we just said before in the memrot of the Amoraim. The second midah is Breshut Mocher, in the property of the Mocher, where the lokeach's utensils are not successful at acquiring on his behalf, and he needs either a kinyan akbah or a kinyan mishicha to take it out. The third location is Breshut Lokeach, where it works even without his kelim, or even in the kelim of the mocher. And the fourth is the location of the third party, when it's with the nifkad, when it's with the person watching on behalf of the seller. So that's the way the Rabbeinu Gershom explains the Arba Midot of the Tosefta. And it just simply explains that we went through here four different locations, and each of those locations has a different din. The Rashbam over here rejects that explanation. That is because there are two dinim in that bright, or two locations that have the exact same din. And that is Bishut Mocher or Bishut HaNifkad, whether it's in the property of the Mocher or it's in the property of the Nifkad. And what the Rashbam indicates is that the dinim mentioned by the Rishut HaMocher and the dinim mentioned by the Rishut of the Nifkad, all of those can be interchangeable. And that means in the Rishut HaMocher, you can use a Kinyan Agba, a Kinyan Mishicha to take it out of his property, or you can use a Kabbalah that he grants you rights in his property, or you can do a Schirut. All of those will be successful in the Rishut HaMocher. And similarly, Bishut HaNifkad, all of those kinyanim will work. If you lift it up and do a kinyan akbah, it'll be successful. You do a kinyan mishicha, you take it out of that property to another property, of course with permission of the seller, or you get granted a right of property from the nifkad, or you rent property from the nifkad. All of those will be successful. And if that's the case, what the Rashbam says is that those two rishuyot don't have different dinim. Why did the Tosefta separate them? It just separated them because that's the usual way. When you're dealing with the Rishut HaMocher, the usual way to do a kinyan is Hagbah and Mishicha. When you're dealing with a third party, the normal way to do a kinyan is a kinyan Kabbalah or kinyan Schirut. But in Ochanami, the dinim are completely interchangeable. The Rishbam says that at the bottom. And based on that, he says, I don't have four Rishuyot over here. Therefore, the Rishbam offers an alternative and says here that the four here are four different dinim. The first din is Midah She'enu Shel Shnehem. It's a midah, a measuring cup that does not belong to either of them, in the Rishut Rabim, or B'chatzer She'enu Shnehem. And it's utilized in a public venue, or in a chatzer doesn't belong to either of them. The next midah is Midah Shel Echad Mehem. It's a midah that belongs to one of the parties. The third case is Rishut Lokeach, when you're in the property of the Lokeach. The fourth din is the Rishut HaMocher, or the Rishut of the Nifkad. They're interchangeable. And that's the fourth din of the Braita. So the Tosefta is giving you four dinim. One din about a utensil that doesn't belong to either of them. They're borrowing it from a third party. And then it has the qualifications of locations. The second din is when the midah belongs to one of the parties. Then the third din is when you're in the property of the lokeach. And the fourth din is when you're in the property of the mocher or the nifkad. That's the way that the Rashbam explains it. The Balei HaTosafot disagree with the Rashbam and say that the property of the Nifkad and the Mocher are not interchangeable. And that's for one reason, which is Kabbalah. You have the ability to grant someone rights in a property when it's dealing with a third party. Over here, the Mocher is trying to sell to the buyer, and the stuff is sitting in a warehouse belonging to a third party. That third party can grant ownership on behalf of the Lokeach, and the Mocher, in a sense, can take possession of it on behalf of the buyer so that the sale will go through. But that's because the third party is granting that right of ownership. What you can't do is grant ownership in your own property to another party simply through dibur, simply through speaking. It will work if you have a formalized kinyan. If you use a kinyan, karka, whatever the normal kinyanim of karka, then you can rent and you can give it over to him to utilize for that purpose, but then you need a kinyan. The only way to have a Kabbalah work is if it's dealing with a third party. A third party can articulate your right and be mezakeh to you, that right, through another party. But what he can't do is grant it to you directly. And therefore, the Baal Tosafot would say that Kabbalah only works by the Reshut HaNifkad. It does not work by the Reshut HaMocher. And that's why the Tosefta was forced to separate those dinim. Despite that fact, the Tosafot agrees with the Reshbam's view that the Mishnah is not saying Arba Midot, referring to Arba Rishiot, but rather Arba Midot is literally four Midot, four different types of measuring cups that are being used over here. Ela the Chashiv Dal Midot, the Kelim. It's talking about four different Kelim. Midat Sarsur. The first case is the Midat that belongs to a broker or a middleman, which is the one Sheino Shoshneim, which we'll see later on. The Gemara will establish that that's the case. Midat Mocher, when you're using the Kelim of the Mocher. Midat Lokeach, when you're using the Kli of the Lokeach. Midat Nifkad, and then when you're using the Kli of the Nifkad. Those are the four different midot in the Mishnah. They're not cases, but literally four different measuring cups, and each one of those cups has a different din. So over here you have three different ways to split up the Tosefta into four parts. The Rabbeinu Gershom thinks it's four different locations. The Rashbam thinks it's four different dinim. And the Baal Tosafot thinks it's four different midot. So now the Gemara continues with the question. It says, Tani Miha, in the Tosefta it says, B'shut Rabim, u'b'chatzer sheinu shnehem. When you have a kli that belongs to one of them, let's assume here it's the kli of the lokeach, that when it is in the Reshut Rabim, or Chatzer Sheino Shnehem, you are successful at acquiring it. My lav, Reshut Rabim Mamash. Must be that we're talking about a real Reshut Rabim over here, and that would show us that the kli shel the lokeach is successful at acquiring even in the Reshut Rabim. And that would go against what we said before, that Rabbi Yochanan, Reish Lakish, and Rabbi Shmuel all agree that there is no kinyan kli be Reshut HaRabim. Here you have an explicit Tosefta saying that you do have a right of acquisition in the Reshut HaRabim. And that's the problem over here. But then the Rabbeinu Gershom sees the question here being that if the Tosefta says Reshut HaRabim, the kli of the Lokeach is successful at acquiring it, that means in a simta, you don't even need the kli of the Lokeach, and that'd be supportive of Rabbi Ami's position. Habasimta filu below kelav kana ukid Rabbi Ami. Gemara answers up below besimto that the Tosefta is speaking about a simta, and in a simta, like we had said before, where it is reshut shel shnehem, the kli of the lokeach is successful at acquiring that. So according to Rabbeinu Gershom, that means it'll be like Rabbi Abou and Rabbi Zeiro who think you do need a kli, and according to the Rashbam and others, it means that this is not a problem for Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish and Rabbi Shmuel. Because this is the same thing that they said. The only problem is, ha-dumya de-chatzer shenu shnehem k'toni. It compares it and puts it in the same category as a chatzer that belongs to neither of them. That would make it mean that it's the Reshut Rabim and not the Simta. The Simta, they both have permission to be there. So my answer is, my chatzer she'ena shel shnehem, nami de-lo de-hai kula, de-lo de-hai kula. That is the meaning of chatzer she'enu shel shnehem. Doesn't mean that it's a place where they neither of them have permission. Rather, it's a place where neither of them has 100% permission. It's actually a shared resource. It's a shared area. And it's the equivalent, Eladitar Bayu. It's the equivalent of a Chatzer, Shel Shnehem. Similar to the way of the Simta on the side of the Reshut HaRabim, it's a location where both of them are allowed to utilize it. So, Boimine Rav Sheshim Rav Huna. Kelav Shalokeach, Bishut Mocher, Kana Lokeach, Olo. When you have the Kelim of Lokeach in the property of the Mocher, is the Lokeach successful? Are not successful at acquiring. The main question in here is the kli of the lokeach substantial enough or significant enough that it's not overrun or annulled by the reshut ha-mocher, and therefore the lokeach can acquire there? Or do we say that the property of the lokeach is so strong that it swallows the kelim of the lokeach, and it's as if they are batel to the property of the lokeach? And as the Baal Tosafot point out here, that you can't solve this from the Tosefta. Even though the Tosefta says that the Kelim of the Lokeach are unsuccessful in their Reshut HaRabim, although they are successful in the Simta, just the fact that they're not successful in their Reshut HaRabim does not mean they will not be successful in the possession of the Mocher. And then you can see the Baal Tosafot would say, because Reshut HaRabim, Achitayma Mishom, Delo Nechalo, Levnei Reshut HaRabim, Sheneach Kelav Sham, Demain Peyes, Uman Shavik. The Reshut HaRabim is a place where nobody wants him to put his items down. And he has no person he can go to get permission to do such. and therefore his kli is not useful or unsuccessful at acquiring the Rishut Rabim, because he has no permission. Not only does he have no permission, the people of the Rishut Rabim don't want it to be there. And since they don't want it to be there, he has no rights at all. Aval mocher shema mashilo makom lokeach shikne mashuz mocher lo. But maybe when it comes to the property of the mocher is willing either to not have his property swallow the kli of the lokeach and allow it to have independence and acquire on behalf of the lokeach, or maybe he's giving permission to use the property in order to acquire the items with his kli, and that would be successful because there you're dealing with a single party, a mocher. And maybe the mocher would permit such an item, even though in Rishut Rabim it would not be the case. So therefore, from our Tosefta, we can't bring a proof. We're going to have to go to other Braitot now, or Mishnayot, to see if we can find a solution to this problem. Mar says, Amalei Tenitua, it's a Mishnah. Zarkula betoch cheka. They threw it into her, literally it means her bosom. But over here, the Rashbam says, Bigadah. He threw the get that he was trying to give to his wife, and it landed on her clothing. Olotoch kalta, or went into her basket. Arizom migureshet. The person is successful at divorcing his wife. So the requirement of a get is natan biyadai, reached the hand of the woman. The Gemara in Gittin learns that it doesn't literally have to be in the hand of the woman, it just has to go into her possession. So here, where it landed on her bigodim, or it landed in her basket, she is successful at taking possession of the get and being divorced. So from here you would prove that the kelim of the lokeach, which here is the kelim of the woman, are successful at acquiring her get, even though she's in the house of the husband, or even though she's in the property of the husband. So you see that the kelim of lokeach, or here the kelim of the woman, are successful differentiating themselves from the property in which they are in, and she can acquire. Amalei Rav Nachman, my time of Peshata Talemei Hahi. Why did you bring the proof from that Mishnah? To Machula Mea Uchle Be'uchla. Because they hit it with 100 hits of this weight. That's the way that the Rashbam reads it over here. That either you threw 100 axes on this with a weight that is called an uchla, or the way that Rashi explains it is that you took a whip and you put a weight at the end of it and you whacked with that weight at the end of it 100 whippings, or the way that the Rabbeinu Gershom says it over here, Omar kama midot madad kan, that they learned the word machu over here not to mean to hit, but rather to measure out. I mean that they're 100 different measurements here that can be measured. There are tons of different explanations for this Mishnah, or the way that the Rashbam is reading it and Rashi is reading it, it means the same thing, that we had 100 different ways to break the solution to undermine this as being a proof. And that's because the Gemara in Gittin asked the same question. And all the Amoraim came back and explained why this case is not a proof as to whether the Kelim Lokeach can acquire Bishut HaMocher. It's a case where the basket is hanging from her. Here, the way the Rashbam explains it, it's both tied to her and hanging off of her, and it will function like a kinyan hagbah on her behalf. It's tied to her, even though it's not hanging from her, it's still tied to her, and it becomes a part and parcel of her, and because of that, she's able to acquire the get. But that's not like the normal case of the kelim lokeach. It's a case where a basket is sitting between her thighs, meaning that it's a personal space. And therefore, when the basket is in her personal space, the reshut of the mocher can't, or the reshut of the baal can't override that. Of course, he gives her permission to sit in the house or to be in the house, and the space between her legs is her own. And therefore, when she puts the basket down here, the kalta is usually a personal basket that had sewing materials in it. And when she puts it between her legs, that's her space, not the reshut of the baal. It's a case where the husband is a seller of baskets. The way the Rabbeinu Gershom explains it is, she bought a basket from her husband, or now to be her ex-husband, and in acquiring the kalta, since she expended money and bought it from him, he gave her permission to use that location in order to acquire her basket. And therefore, she gained access to the property because she was buying a basket from him. And that's how she got access to it. On the other hand, the Rashbam suggests over here, his excess space in the house where he shows off his wares or he sells his baskets, And over there, he doesn't care about the property. If she puts her basket down over there, he grants her a right of ownership, or he doesn't exert his ownership in that case. Or the way that the Balei HaTosafot mentioned over here, why does this work? Because she never makes a kinyan to acquire the property. And as he says, you need some sort of real kinyan. This is an important principle. That you don't need real ownership or real rights of ownership in order for this to work. You simply need permission to put it there. Your kelim function as long as you have permission to put it there. The permission to put it there makes it that the property does not annul the kli, and therefore you are successful at acquiring. So she doesn't really need to get real ownership in the property. She simply needs an understanding that she has a right to put her basket down, and that permission is enough in order to grant her the rights of keeping it distinct and to acquire on her behalf. The reason being that her husband is a basket seller, and either he wants there to be more baskets in his store, or he doesn't care about the space that's there, or he might sell that basket of his wife if he runs out of other baskets. So for all of those reasons, he grants her permission to utilize that space or put it down there. Given that, her kli remains an independent object. Yochanan says that the location of her bosom or her clothing is hers, and the location of her basket are hers. Amarova, my time with Rabbi Yochanan. How do we explain it? What is the meaning behind Rabbi Yochanan's statement? That is the normal way people conduct themselves. They give or grant rights for personal space. The husband's not makpid on his wife's clothing or the space of his wife's clothing. He's not makpid on the where her basket is. These are personal objects which people are expected to have, and therefore he grants her the right to utilize those spaces, because that's considered to be the normal interaction between parties, and that's why she has a right. But because of all of these reasons given by the Amoraim, our case is the case in Gittin is unique, and you can't prove anything about the kelim of the lokeach over there, because the woman has different types of rights than a typical buyer and seller would have in these types of situations. Gemara says, "Ela pshod lameha." Let's learn it out from the Tosefta. Mishut mocher lo kana achik be'eno achi otzi enu mirshuto. Says there that the kli is unsuccessful at acquiring it in the possession of the mocher until either you do a kinyan akbah or you do a kinyan mishicha where you take it out of the possession of the mocher. My love, whose kelim are you using over there? The kelav de lokeach. You're using the kli of the lokeach, and despite that, the only way to acquire it is through a kinyan akbah or a kinyan mishicha. Your kli doesn't work. So that would be a proof that the kli of the lokeach is batel to the karka of the mocher. Lo, the kelav de mocher. We're talking about the kelim of the mocher. So in the kelim of the mocher, you can only be successful at acquiring it if you do a kinyan akbah or a kinyan mishicha and take it out of the property. But had it been the kli of the lokeach in Ochanami, maybe you would be successful at acquiring it. Umidureisha b'kelav de mocher, seifanami b'kelav de mocher. But once you do that, and you tell me that the kelim in the reisha are talking about a case of the mocher, then the kelim in the seifa should also be the kelim of the mocher. Ema, seifa, what are you going to do with the latter half of the breit or tosefta? Bishut lokeach, when it's the property of lokeach, kemen shekibel alav mocher, kana lokeach. As soon as the mocher agrees to the sale, the lokeach acquires it. Vi b'kelav de mocher, if it's in the property or in the kelim of the mocher, amai kana lokeach. Why is the lokeach successful at acquiring it? You're telling me now that the kelim can be distinct from the property itself. If that's the case, then the kelim of the mocher in the lokeach's property remain distinct, and the lokeach has no means by which to acquire it. His property can't acquire it because it doesn't override the kelim of the mocher. The kelim of the mocher are his. The lokeach can't acquire with someone else's property. And so then why does it automatically happen in that situation? It says, Seifatan, the kelav de lokeach. No, that case is clearly, it's talking about the kelim of the lokeach. So since it's the kelim of the lokeach, as soon as the seller agrees, the sale goes through. Gemara says, wait a minute, Umay Pascha, why would you differentiate like that? How come you're suggesting that the case in the beginning of the Braita or Tosefta is talking about the kelim of the mocher, and the case later on is talking about the kelim of the lokeach? Why would you make such a distinction to change the ukimtot in the Tosefta without any reason or indication that there is such a change? Gemara says, Tamu de Milta, that's the normal situation. Be mocher, when you're dealing with the property of the mocher, mani de mocher. The kelim that are available there, that are found there, are the kelim of the mocher. Be lokeach, when you're in the property of lokeach, mani de lokeach shchichei. Then the most common kelim to be found there are the kelim of the lokeach. And for that reason, you would distinguish between the two parts of the Tosefta and suggest that the Kelim of the Mocher in the first place are what are being used in the property of the Mocher, and you have no proof about Kelim of the Lokeach. And in the case of the property of the Lokeach, it is the Kelim of the Lokeach, and therefore again, you have no proof because we don't know if the property of the Lokeach can override the Kelim of the Mocher, can't override it. And therefore, you have no proof from the two sections of the Tosefta as to whether Kelim have independent status in the face of Karka. As the Balei Tosfot point out over here, from the conclusion of the Gemara and the Tosefot over here, it seems that first of all, you can make a Kinyan Akbar, a Kinyan Meshicha, with the Kelim of the Mocher, in the Mocher's property. So that's one interesting thing, that you don't need the Kelim of the Lokeach, you can even use Kelim of Mocher to have a Kinyan Meshicha. Tosfot also points out, the Gemara could have given an alternate answer, which is that the Reshut of the Lokeach and the Reshut of the Mocher are different. And that is in the Reshut of the Mocher, that even though the Kelim of the Lokeach are not subsumed under the property of the Mocher, nevertheless, the Mocher's Kelim are subsumed by the property of the Lokeach. That's because the Mocher wants it to happen that way. Because the Mocher wants the transaction to go through. And therefore, he will not exercise the right to keep his Kelim independent, and then they will become Batel to the Karka. So Tosfot offers that alternative answer. But the Gemara itself gives an answer which just says that we're talking about different Kelim over here, and therefore we have no proof to our question. And we will stop here, three lines from the bottom, and the Gemara will continue to bring other Tanaic works in order to try to come to a conclusion about this question about the Kelim of Lokeach, Reshut HaMocher.